All right, the Giants try to break that four-game losing streak as they take on the A's today in the Bay Bridge Series, which is tied up 1-1. It'll be games 3 and 4 this weekend. Bruce Jenkins joins us. Bruce, how are you? Nice to talk with you as always.
Absolutely. I'm doing well. Thanks, Marty.
Yeah, quite a week of baseball. But let's start with this one, and that is with Vince Scully, Bruce, because you grew up with him. I grew up with him. I was saying to Susan, I was 10 years old. I saw him at Ebbets Field buying a hot dog in between games of a doubleheader. And he spanned my whole lifetime, really, of baseball and for you in L.A. as well. So what did the meaning of Vin passing, what did it mean to you?
Well, you know, it's funny. When the Dodgers moved west, they had a lot of these guys from Brooklyn, you know, Carl Farrillo and Duke Snyder and, you know, Charlie Neal, and the names that had been so big in Brooklyn but were really kind of near the end and weren't going to be doing a whole lot once they got to L.A. But Vince Scully comes out as part of the package. And, we don't know. You know, we've never heard of Vince Scully, but it didn't take long for him to take hold. I just always think back to it's a scene in our backyard. My dad's in the barbecue basting the chicken. He's got a system rigged where he can pipe Vince Scully's call out of his studio and out into the backyard. And I'm playing wiffle ball with my buddy Jack, and you know, night after night. And I was talking to my friend about this and how beautiful that was, and how my mom got caught up in it. She wasn't a big baseball fan, but she's listening to this man on the radio. He could talk about anything. You'd be into it, but it completely changed and shaped my life because my parents were musicians, but I really wasn't, and they knew that pretty early on. But they was hoping I'd find something else in life, and I found it through reading Jim Murray in the L.A. Times and listening to Vince Scully, and I thought maybe I could be a sports writer. So, but the way he described the games. And, people have this all over the country, whether it's Jack Buck or Ernie Harwell, Mel Allen. You know, this is a countrywide thing where you've got your announcer, and the really good ones really grab a hold of you. John Miller does that here for people listening on radio. And for me, it was Vince Scully, and he really was the absolute top guy. And how lucky we all were to have him then, and just as recently as a few years ago.
Well, to me, he's the greatest of all time, without a doubt. Without a doubt, the greatest sports broadcaster, and maybe even television personality broadcaster of all time. I don't think anyone came close to him. And your experience was very similar to others in Los Angeles and Brooklyn, and I had it as well. So, yeah, it was a loss. Did you see the tribute last night that the Dodgers did to him before the game?
I didn't see that one. I've seen a bunch of stuff that's come across, all great, all a little bit different, but I didn't see the one the Dodgers came up with. I have it on tape, though.
Absolutely watch it. It was beautiful. And Dave Roberts made a beautiful speech to conclude it as well. Yeah, that was Vince Scully, and it's a loss, 94 years old, but it touched so many people in a good way, And that's what I'll always remember him for teaching me the game and giving me the love of baseball when I was a kid in Brooklyn. Wow.
You know, if you were broadcasting the Giants right now, having lost 8 in a row to the Dodgers, and say he's in the Giants booth, you would not hear any depression or negativity or here we go again or what's wrong with these bums or, you wouldn't hear that sense of depression that falls over so many announcers when their boys aren't coming through. You know, every broadcast would be an absolute delight, and that's what he did. You know, he always looked for the good in people, because when your team loses, somebody on the other team is doing something good and should get recognized for it.
Yep, I could hear him saying it now. 2-2 to Brandon Crawford.
Big bouncer over the mound, back of second base, up with his mantilla, throws low and wild. Hodges scores, we go to Chicago.
1959. Very good, Bruce. Very good. All right. Let's talk about the Giants. My God, what a week for them. And hell, they've lost 11 straight in the National League West and 12 out of 15 at a bad time to do this.
Well, to say the least. I mean, it's so funny. At the All-Star break, it was reasonable to think that they could get it together, get everybody healthy, get some better years out of Peterson and Yaz, get their bats revived, and Rodon and Webb, and or maybe they make a trade that really helps them, that they would do something. Well, the fact that they did essentially nothing at all, I think, left everybody flat, including the team. I mean, you look for who, no matter who you are, and the Phillies and Cardinals, their rivals in the race, both got it in huge ways. Lots of teams did. Lord knows San Diego did. And the Giants did nothing at all, and now they've completely fallen flat. They're seven out. And, you know, the Phillies and Cardinals, if you look at the lineups, it's not even close how much better they are than the Giants. It's just comically one-sided. So it's a really tough spot to be in. They're really going to have to pull together and get career 2 months out of a bunch of guys. Having Webb and Rodon win, 75% at least of their starts, get the bullpen together, and somehow sneak into the wild card. I don't see it happening, but, it's baseball. It's a lot of weird things can happen.
Well, plenty of games left, but you're exactly right. They did activate Brandon Crawford today and Jock Peterson.
Oh, that's
so
good.
So the Dixon Machado era is over, and Villar. Machado was okay. Hey, he caught the ball. It's short. He couldn't hit it all, but he caught the ball. And then Villar, who had 21 homers in the PCL and started off very well, and then they got to him. He's back in Sacramento too. But I like the way he played third. So we may see him again at some point. But Bruce, let's talk about the Giants and Farhan for a second. There's interesting, and Killian will be with us later in the show as well, and Susan was on with us earlier, and John Shea's written about it. The Chronicle really has covered this well. There are a couple of competing interests here. One is winning games, and two, there's an entertainment value. And Farhan's, we're going to win games our way, and that is we're going to get marginal players, and they have not gone out other than Chris Bryant and gotten a big-name player. And if we can win that way, it's okay with us. And then, of course, the other side of the coin is you are in the entertainment business in the Bay Area, and you need named players to get that buzz with the fan base. So where are they really? And is he in a vacuum and not realizing this? And where are they going?
Well, last year they built a roster that was not designed to be very entertaining, to be honest. It's a lot of the guys we're looking at now. There weren't, it had Buster Posey for sure, and you're getting some big ears out of guys that you love like Crawford and Belt. But I wouldn't say it was designed to be a wildly entertaining team. And they played so well that they became absolutely can't miss radio or television. They never lost. I mean, it worked so well. See, I think everyone is disappointed in Farhan's lack of action, but I think he deserved a chance to run it back this year, and not give up on what he created, the system that he created with all the coaches and the platooning and bargain signings, and see if they could do it again. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. He's reached the point now where it's clearly not working, and I thought he would see that at the break. But he also knows that baseball can be funny. And these guys conceivably could get into the postseason, as you and I have talked many times. If you go in with Webb and Rodon in a best of three series, that could be over real quick. So I think he's an optimist. He's trying to justify all the moves that he's made. But I think the real reckoning comes after the season. Even if they were to sneak in, I don't think they go very far. And it becomes apparent that they do need star power. I mean, as I was saying, forget the Padres and the Dodgers, the Phillies and the Braves and the Mets and the Cardinals just, crush the Giants in terms of star power. This is what you need. I mean, forget last year. And we're seeing it now, how desperately they need it. And he's going to have to go out and do something to get that process rolling where they spend their money and they bring in some big names. You don't have to be foolish. You don't have to give somebody 12 years and $180 trillion, but you can, and I know he won't, I think he'll jack it up a little bit in terms of let's take it a little step above the VRs and the Machados, okay?
Well, I hope so, because this is the end of year four of his regime. And, of course, last year was magical. As you said, everything worked last year. But when you look at, you know, the first year was Bochy's last year, was under 500. Then we had the COVID year, which was under 500. Then last year, which was magnificent. And now we're back to this year. So this is the end of year four, and we really haven't made that jump into the stars again and revitalizing the franchise again, even with the farm system has gone backwards a little. So I think he's under somewhat of a little bit of a microscope, at least this winter, to see what you do.
Well, absolutely. And now it's, you know, the trading deadline's over. You can't go back and fix that. but, yeah, it's, this winter is huge for him. Lots of pressure. You know, I think even the most reasonable and patient fans will kind of have their arms folded waiting to see what he does. Because if they come back with the same kind of team, they're going to get just smoked in the National League. And so that, you know, this is what we're going to see. And I fully expect him to change gears. I mean, the money's there. The ownership has the money. I'm sure they want, Lord knows, they want more entertainment value. The crowds are, they're not bad at Oracle, but they're not great either. There's a lot of empty seats out there. So entertainment is the thing, and they're going to have to focus on that.
Yep. No, I agree with you there. And, you know, look, he rolled the dice this year with the older players, and they were terrific last year. They had career years, not just great years at 34 years old, but career years. Mm-hmm. And plus, Posey is gone, and a couple of the pitchers are gone. So he did roll the dice that he could do it again with these players, and we've talked about it. And when you go with older players, two things can happen. One, they can get injured, or two, they can have poor years as they get older. Unfortunately, he got both of them, and that's what happened. So I understand what he did, and I was for it. And, you know, we thought they'd win in the 90s, but now it's obvious they don't have the players, and something's got to happen. And I don't think it can be ignored anymore. So, all right, that's where they are. But still, there's 56 games to go. And, Bruce, they can pitch. They can pitch, and they do have a bullpen. They're just not scoring runs right now.
Yeah, and you know, and we're gonna need huge revivals from a lot of players. If it was just, say, like two guys, like just Acuna and Matt Olson get hot, they can carry you. Or, you know, somebody like Soto can almost carry you by himself. But, you know, Crawford's not going to do that. Yaz isn't going to do that. Peterson's not going to do that. They need a bunch of guys like last year to collectively really start hitting. Can't happen. It's baseball. We've seen it. We've seen it from them. So everybody's just so depressed right now. It doesn't seem feasible, but that's what's going to have to happen to salvage the rest of this season. I think to expect them to make this wild rush and pass three teams and get into the wild card is a little bit much, but it's certainly not beyond their capability to at least, you know, win a couple games. They're 0-11 against the West, you know, coming out of the second half. I mean, cause come on now. That's not a good number.
No, it's not a good sign. But here we are. The Bay Bridge series is back. It's 1-1. Rodon did beat the A's the last time. Then Pinder hit that home run, and I think it was Cole Irvin threw a great game, and the A's won it 1-0. And now we're back in Oakland, and Rodon, and he's going against Adam Aller today, who's got awful numbers, and you get Logan Webb tomorrow against who knows who. This is a series, as Susan says, all these series, they should win and then they don't. This is an important series for them.
It is, and it's not very long. It's just two games, and they should win behind those two guys for sure. But, you know, the A's have been playing well. I mean, they were so bad for so long, but all of a sudden they started beating Houston and the White Sox, and, you know, they'll get Rodon. They're good run of right-hand hitters with Laureano and Murphy and Pinder. Those guys can rake, and they've been homering, and the A's have come to life a little bit, and they'll be at home, and it's a big deal for them against the Cross Bay team. So it's certainly no cakewalk, but for the Giants, I mean, they need two wins right here, right now.
I'm with you. All right, Bruce Jacobs with us, of course, from the Chronicle. And, Bruce, it's funny. I found an old tape today. I looked at it and said, Marty Lurie, Bruce Jacobs, 2004.
Whoa.
So it's... I haven't listened to it yet, but it's been a while, so I always love talking
from Oakland
with you. Yeah, I guess so. I guess it was you and me. All right. Justin Verlander. Bruce, this is a great baseball story. This guy's 15-3. He's got 241 Major League wins now. and he just had his option vested, where now he decides if he wants to come back at $25 million next year for Houston. How about that story?
Oh, geez, he's 15-3 with a 1.7 something ERA. You know, playing for Dusty, his arm feels great. He's gone through the surgery, and you know, with 60 wins to go, that doesn't seem terribly likely for a 39-year-old guy to rack up, you know, three 20 win seasons in, you know, in the next 3 years. But you can't rule it out either. That team just gets better and better. Geez, they get Trey Mancini. He quickly hits three homers in two games. Then, you know, I don't know how long Dusty's going to be around, but they've shaken the whole scandal thing. They're so good. They really are a good and fun team to watch, and good young talent coming in. Maurice Dubon's having a blast over there. He made a great catch, by the way, one of the best catches
of
the
year. I saw it. Yeah, laid out.
You know, Verlander, he truly loves the game. He worked awfully hard to get through, you know, 2020, basically throwing like one, you know, six innings that whole year, and then he's out last year. So he's totally revitalized. I mean, I don't see. I think as long as he's pitching the way he is, anything's possible. And you know, no sign of slowing down. So you just don't know. That's a pretty old guy, but the arm would be 2 years older if he didn't miss any time. So who knows?
Well, but he's going to be in the playoffs, and it's going to be, and he is their guy. So it is going to be interesting to see what he could do at 39 years old. It's a great baseball story. Boy, one of the other ones that one of our listeners pointed out to me, kind of the anniversary of Thurman Munson's death, and of course there's a tragic plane crash. But I bring it up for this reason, Bruce. You know, everyone's looking at the Hall of Fame differently now. We talked about Will Clark maybe having Hall of Fame numbers, Keith Hernandez having Hall of Fame numbers. They're looking at players differently, where you don't have to have the 3,000 hits or 500 home runs or 300 wins, and you can be a Hall of Famer. You think Munson will get in that category of looking him that way?
Yeah, I do. I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, why look at 3,000 hits or 300 wins or any of those? Those things aren't going to happen. You know, it's very hard to hit 300 now, let alone, you know, put a bunch of those seasons together. 3,000 hits is just ridiculous. 200 wins is out of reach for a lot of pitchers, because wins don't mean anything. Guys get taken out in the fifth inning with one out. They get one more out, and they qualify for the win, and they're yanked out of the game. I mean, the numbers don't mean as much. I think what will always mean a lot, especially in terms of Will Clark, is a 300 lifetime average, which he has, 303 or 309 or something like that, and there's most of today's best hitters, almost all of them do not have that lifetime. It's like Altuve and Miguel Cabrera, and who else can you name? Mm-hmm. So those things are going to count. And Munson was a 292 hitter, which is very good for a catcher. You know, emotionally, anybody who watched him play. And this is New York, too, which means, you know, a pretty big and attentive audience. Anyone who watched him play can feel a tremendous surge of emotion remembering how you felt watching him, especially, you know, throwing guys out with a shoulder was falling off. And an unbelievable gamer, as you well know. Played a winner, played for championship teams, one of the great catchers in the game, won an MVP, perennial All-Star and MVP for like 6 years in a row, and you know, he died in a plane crash. But I think for sure, I think Munson, he just epitomized of what it meant to be, you know, just the best. And of course, you know, in the 1976 World Series, they played the Reds, and you had Munson and Bench. Ah, this is unbelievable, and the two best they're going at it are certainly two of the best. And Bench was so good, you just forgot completely about Munson, and the Reds swept him and say, like, oh, my God. But Munson, I saw a lot of him in Yankee Stadium. I watched them play the tape, and, you know, fans are tearing up. Even they've seen it like 16 times now. They're still tearing up. He just was a very, very special player. He's got some numbers, but, you know, the impact that he had, I've always weighed that hugely, and I always voted for him without fail.
Yep. Yep, I think with our new way of looking at things, I think he's back in the picture again. I think it's going to happen. Staying with the Yankee theme just for a second, boy, the Cardinal-Yankee game was excellent last night. Yankees had, I think, a 3-2 lead. The Cardinals got two in the eighth to win the game 4-3. And today, Jordan Montgomery, who was a Yankee, pitches for the Cardinals against the Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
The Yankees aren't quite, you know, clicking on all cylinders right now.
That's a great series. I wish it would last a little bit longer. That's a wonderful, wonderful, you know, because it's not a rivalry, but it's just two really good teams. You don't see them facing each other, and especially a lot at stake for the Cardinals. The Cardinals are playing great ball right now. You know, aside from Goldschmidt and Arenado, I mean, you know, Carlson's playing great. He's taken over center field where they don't miss Harrison Bader too much, and Tommy Edman, and Molina's back after a long absence. And he was out there with Wainwright, you know, the other night for like the 318th time where they started a game together. Seriously. And, you know, Pujols is getting – he hit like a massive home run the other night. He's 100 years old. He's still swinging the bat. And then they get these two pitchers, and they're really excited. And, you know, for the Yanks, it's like they didn't do a whole lot. They didn't super improve themselves. And they've just been dominating to the point where I could see where they could be a little flat and not – pay any kind of price, but anytime these two teams are going to play, it's just super interesting.
Well, good time for baseball. This will be fun today, and look, every game now is compelling for the Giants, and as you said, they need wins. Hey, 1952, Satchel Paige, 47 years old, actually pitches a complete game. How about this? Imagine Satchel Paige as a kid, what he must have been.
Oh, geez, yeah. You know, he comes out of the deep South. He's like a family of 13 kids. They have no money. Most of the time he doesn't have shoes, as he reminded people over the years. And he grows into this towering figure with long arms, long legs. And he came up with a wonderful, deceptive delivery and something you don't see. We've talked about this. You don't see nearly enough pitchers who try to deceive hitters. It's all about timing. You know, if you stand out there like a statue and here it comes, there's zero throwing off of the timing from a physical standpoint. It's just up to your stuff. But he kicked his front leg up higher than Marischal, and he pulled his right arm back, all the way back with these phenomenal wrists, and launched the fastball like a catapult. And he had all the pitches, and he had no idea where it was coming. And he probably threw, you know, easily in the 90s, if not more. And just he pitched professionally for 40 years, Marty. He started out in 1926, and in 66 he was still pitching for some minor league team. In 65, Charlie Finley, who was always up for a good idea, brought Satchel Paige out of retirement. Satchel Paige is 59, okay, and he's out there against the Red Sox, and he pitches three scoreless innings. He gets the only hit was a double by Yaz, not Mike Yaz, but Carl Yaz. and you know the really great thing was in. He finally made it to the major leagues in 1948. He was an old guy then. He was 42, but he comes up to Cleveland, which was right in the race, and they wind up winning the whole thing. But you know, with a great pitching staff, with you know, Bob Lemon and Bob Feller and everything else, and Satchel Paige weighs in 6-1, 2.48 ERA at 42, mm-hmm. His first look at the big league. So just he was truly amazing, and you know he's increasingly getting a lot of credit for. Setting up the climate that surrounded Jackie Robinson finally breaking the color barrier, because if you really study his career, you know, a lot of white fans were coming out to see the Negro Leagues, and a lot of white sports writers were going there to see the likes of Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson. You know, and Satchel Paige pitched for the Kansas City Monarchs, who's probably the most high-profile team in the Negro Leagues, and that's where Jackie Robinson wound up. But, you know, you and I heard his name, right? We'd hear his name all, you know, throughout our lives. And little bits of information coming in here. Oh my God, Satchel Paige! You know, I mean, just for what he did in the Negro Leagues, or what it must have been like to watch him in the Negro Leagues. The stats are kind of sketchy from there because you know they could barely afford a statistician or a PR guy or even a scoreboard probably sometimes. But so he kept his own books and he reckoned he pitched 2,500 games. And you're thinking, well, you know, he might have, you know, all the barnstorming and everything he did and. One time his books had him at 50 no-hitters, and the next time he looked, well, there was 20 no-hitters. He was getting a little creative there, but anything that he could have put down was plausible, which is a wonderful thing in itself. So there's a legendary figure for you.
Well, maybe the greatest ever. He may have been the greatest. I saw him pitch for the Miami Marlins, believe it or not, International League when I was again. Got 12, 13 years old, and I don't remember much, but I do remember him coming in and sort of you know, the way he walked, I can remember that.
Yeah.
But I did see him pitch. Hey, great to talk with you. Bruce Jenkins, obviously the Chronicle. Good baseball discussion. We've got the Bay Bridge here, and then tomorrow we've got more action, and each game now becomes more important.
No doubt. Look forward to tomorrow then, Marty.
All right. Have a good afternoon. Thanks, Bruce.
Okay.
All right. That is Bruce Jenkins. Boy, more coming up. Next joining us will be Austin Slater. Talk to him, and he's part of the competition committee on the rule changes. This is going to be an interesting conversation. More coming up. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.